My name is Richard Lamparsky, and my guest today just flew in from Los Angeles last night. He had a rather hectic trip, from what he tells me. I don't think he's had as much sleep as he should have, and I'm doubly grateful to have him here today, because he hasn't been in New York, 1945, and when he starts to talk, you'll know he's a New York boy. You want to introduce yourself?
Well, I'm Leo Gorski, and I did have a little difficulty in getting down here. It was my fault, though. I missed the plane by 5 minutes, and I live in a suburban area where planes do not fly out every 5 minutes like you do from Los Angeles. So I had to wait about 10 hours to catch a plane. And meanwhile, I had about 10 drinks, which didn't help any. But I finally did board a plane that got me down here, and I was real excited to see the city after being away from it so long. I was just very excited to see what was going on, and boy, there's plenty going on.
Yeah, this is where the action is, big time.
Built up a powerful lot since I left.
Where did you grow up in New York? Which borough?
I was born on 173rd Street, Fort Washington Avenue, Upper Manhattan. I went up there, and I didn't recognize that at all because it was so, so different. When I was born there, it was just few people lived in apartment houses, and two kids went to school across the street. Today, you can't even practically walk down the street without bumping into people. Slightly different, like overpopulated.
Leo Gorski wrote a book recently, which was published by Vantage Press, and the cover reads as follows: Leo B. Gorski, an original Dead End Kid, presents Dead End Yells, Wedding Bells, Cockle Shells, and Dizzy Spells. It's a very amusing book, very economically priced, published by Vantage. And a lot of the information that I base my questions on comes from the book, which I recommend highly, by the way. One of the things that amused me and interested me was the fact that you were not, unlike some of the, I think, the kids in Dead End, in a school for actors. Tell them, were you, how you got the part? I thought that was very interesting.
I never studied acting. My father was an actor, but nevertheless, I started out to be a plumber, and I worked for my uncle, who had a plumbing shop on 23rd Street, New York. Very nice plumbing shop, but he only paid me $6 a week, and for a while, that kind of got me by. And then things, prices started to go up, and the $6 didn't look so good. I went about getting the more remunerative, there's a beautiful word, remunerative job. My father was an actor and always could have gotten me into plays if I wished to do them, which I did not. But he always could have gotten me a job. So finally, as a day popper, I don't like this pay I'm getting. All of a sudden, I can't buy a pair of slacks or a pair of shoes in a month. So he said, well, I'll see what I can do. And he happened to be sort of friends with somebody that had something to do with producing Dead End. I can't quite remember with whom he was associated or knew. But he got me in the play.
That was 1935.
That was in 1935, and it paid $35 a week, which in those days was
equity minimum, probably.
Yeah, but it was a big sum of money.
Mm. Sure,
because
the depression.
I was working for either $6 or $8 a week when I decided to change my occupation. And the interesting part about that was that I asked for a raise, $35 a week. I wanted $50. big deal. So they wouldn't give it to me. They said, no, we're going to fire Sidney Kings. He said, we'll get somebody else. We can replace you any day in a week. There's a bunch of kids in New York can play their part. I said, well, find one. I said, I want $50 a week. And they gave me the $50. I thought that was fun.
Tell me, why didn't Sidney Lumet, now, was one of the original kids on the Broadway
right.
show, right? So why didn't he go to Hollywood with you?
Well, Sidney Lumet, today, incidentally, is a very famous director.
One of the best, yeah.
And I never could understand, because Sidney Lumet was one of those real shy kind of fellas that never had anything to say about anything, and he was the one that I would have voted to be the least likely to succeed of the Denon kids, and he's doing the best of all of them. He's just the most famous director around, because I read a big article about him, and it made him look like a big man.
He's done some very good pictures, yeah. Do you see many of them or hear from many of the boys you worked with over the years?
Not really. We never were as friendly as most people think we might have been.
I gathered that from your book, but what do you say? Well, whose nose did you break?
we had a few little arguments, which actors do that work together, regardless of whether it's the Dead End Kids or whether it's Abbott and Costello or whether it's Martin and Lewis.
Or whether it's a married couple, sure.
That's all.
Sure.
They have a few little beefs once in a while, and if somebody gets a broken nose, it means that they didn't duck too fast.
You're going to see two of them tomorrow night. We're going to have dinner with Hunts Hall, then go to see Something Different, starring Gabriel Dell, and have a drink with him later.
That sounds real neat.
So we know what those two are doing, and we know what you're doing. What about Bernard Punsley?
Punsley,
I'm sorry.
This is the most startling, the career of a dead-end kid. He did most startlingly. I don't know if it's such a word. He became an M.D., a doctor. He went in the Army, and not a D.O., you know, that don't count for too many points. M.D. So he had a baby, had a one baby first time. And I always say about him that he's the only guy that not only planted the seed, but personally plucked the flower.
Well, that's very interesting, yes.
Obstetrician. Uh-huh. Whatever that means. It means you deliver babies, but he delivered his own or something.
I talked last week, it was, to Billy Hallop on the phone, and he's living in Pacific Palisades. He said he isn't married, and he has had no children from his previous marriage. He did a film last year with Dick Van Dyke called Fitzwillie. There's a small part in it, playing, I think, a chef. Tell me about Whitey, Billy Benedict.
Just to mention one word about Billy Hallop, I always thought he was a very good actor. I'm just reminiscing.
Sure, do.
Gabriel Dell was the best actor in the group. And I considered Billy Hallop like equivalent, you know, something like that. The actor that I thought was the worst one, actually, in the final analysis, did the best. The actor I thought was the worst one was me.
You ended up with a star billing.
And I finally managed to survive, and I can't say that outside of Punsley that most of them survived as well. It's all, and I was sorry to interrupt you on your next question.
No, that's all right. Now, I would say, too, that whatever you think of your acting...
It surprised me more than anybody. But I'm the only one that has no problems at all. I raise cows, and I raise horses, and I raise dogs and wives and everything. But I don't have any real problems in life. outside of coming to New York, that was a problem.
So it was a problem getting you here.
That's what I mean.
But, no, you mentioned your acting. I must say that whatever you think of it, Leo Gorcey, it was most distinctive. There's no one else who does Leo Gorcey.
Well, there's a couple of guys that try it occasionally.
Yes, right. Well, that's the most sincere form of flattery. You were going to tell me about Whitey, Billy Benedict.
Benedict actually was the nicest, really, one of the nicest fellows I ever worked with. He never did much in the pictures, but he always was, he just was nice. Everybody else would be groaning and griping, too early to work, too late to work, you know how actors gripe. And he never, ever, ever, he just sit down and relax, because he was older than most people thought he was. When he was doing the pictures, he was about 50 years old, where most of the kids in the picture were maybe 30, 25. He was much older.
This was during the Bowery Boys series,
yes,
later on.
But he was much older than he appeared to be in pictures. And he was a very settled boy. I always liked him. We used to fish together. We used to go surf fishing. And one day, I stubbed my toe on a rock. I was running out there in a real hurry to catch a sea bass. And I stubbed my toe, and it really fascinated me how interested he was that I, you know, you want to take care of my toe, like, you know, fix it. Because he couldn't, because it was stubbed. But he really took a sincere interest in it, and he taped it up or something. I don't know what he did. And it was rather surprising, because most time, guy stubs his toe, the other guy says, it's too bad you stubbed your toe, it's rough, you know. I mean, that's their attitude. Very, very nice person.
What's he doing now, do you know?
No, for a while he did miniature, I should say. He built miniature sets and pictures, but I do not know what he's doing now.
The one that surprised me, I think, the most was the Negro boy, Sunshine Leo Morrison.
Yeah.
tell them what he's doing. That really threw
boy,
me.
I want to tell you something. The first part is not funny. Bobby Jordan died, but Leo Sunshine Morrison showed up at the funeral, and he's the only one that had a Cadillac. I drove up in a Mercury, and the funeral's not funny, but it's very funny where everybody drove up Mercury's, Ford's, even that other car in the middle, Chevrolet's. Leo Sunshine Morrison comes in with the biggest Cadillac you ever saw, and he said, where'd you steal the car, I asked him. He says, I didn't steal it. He says, I'm working in missile work now. And he says, I got a good job there. And he says, I'm going to get my girlfriend one just like it. I said, well, that's nice. I'm driving a Mercury. I said, maybe I should go in missile work. I don't even know what it means.
Well, evidently it pays pretty well.
That's evidently, yes. To put it mildly, it must.
I was talking about you about a week ago with two producers, friends of mine, and we were having lunch, and one said, you know, whatever you ask him on the air, I want you to be sure and ask Leo Gorcey about the little fellow who played Louie. And then I read your book, and I found, well, why do not people know that Louie was your dad?
Yeah, he was my pop.
That was never publicized, was it?
And I think he was the best actor of the whole group.
We ran Jinx Money the other day, which you suggested we get.
And incidentally, getting back, yep. I want to just cover one point. What's his name? Leo Sunshine Morrison was one of the nicest fellas I ever worked with. He was always very cooperative. and he was never late for work, and he always, you know, cooperative. It was the best word for it. And we always got along as a group very well together. I just wanted to mention that fact. As far as Papa was concerned, he was the greatest. He was in Avery's Irish Rose in about 1926 and 1924, and it was one of the longest-running plays on Broadway. And he played the starring role in Avery's Irish Rose. Incidentally, I'm come from a mixed family.
Your mother's Catholic.
Russian Jew and Irish Catholic. Mm-hmm. Well, that's about as mixed as you can get, but I'm trying too hard. But Papa was a good actor. He just was a good actor. It's too bad. He got killed in an auto accident. It was not a natural death. He made a mistake of hitting a car head on.
Yeah, we ran, was called Jinx Money. Remember, I spoke with you on the phone in your ranch in Las Molinas, and I said, which film would you suggest? And you gave me a couple of suggestions, and we got Jinx Money from Allied Artists, and two fellows and I ran it, and the first person, you know, they commented on was, they said, the little guy who ran the candy store, Louie, find out about him.
He was too funny for one reason. He didn't have too much to say in the early pictures. And one day, and if you could see this, he was a little man. And he's facing a bunch of big men. And one day he said, I want to tell you, fellas, if you don't give me more to say and more to do, I'm quitting. And he's facing the moguls of the studio, whatever you call them, you know, his old three says, if you don't give me more to say, I'm quitting. And quitting what? He wasn't doing anything at that time. I just thought that was funny. He says, I'm leaving.
How did you fellows fare on the Hollywood social scene when you got out there? Were you invited to Norma Shearer's parties?
No. I went to only one big party. I really didn't like it, if you want to know the truth. Not that I'm a big judge of parties, but kind of when I go to a party with a girl, I expect the girl to stay sort of side by side, and, most parties, they don't do that. They kind of spread out the action, and well, I don't want to sound old-fashioned or anything, but I didn't approve of it.
You told a story in your book, which I'll give you a cue to, and I wish you would tell it, because I can't the way you wrote it. It's a story about the time you got the gun, and you shot, you were looking for something to shoot. Martha Ray is involved in this story. Would you tell that story?
Well, I bought a. I was the treasurer of the outfit, and we used to get paid in cash about $4,000 a week. Cash, that's a bunch of cash. So I decided, in case somebody wants to try to crash the cash, I should have a gun. So I went and bought a gun. And I wanted to see if this gun worked. After I bought it, I wanted to see if it was going to work. So I went in the dressing room, and incidentally, this was on tour with four of the children, I say now, because then they were children. And my wife was on tour, and we were having quite a bit of difficulty matrimonially. I went in and I...
Excuse me, is this your first wife?
This was my first wife.
One of the four.
The one that married Groucho Marx. But everybody knew I was having a little difficulty with her, which complicated matters more, and I bought this gun, to protect the $4,000 a week, which I had in my keg until I could get it to the bank. And I decided to see if the gun worked. I wanted to see if it worked. So I filled up the toilet bowl. I kind of put it on real slow until it was real full. And I shot the gun into the toilet bowl, and it kind of cracked it in various and sundry ways. But everybody else came running in. They thought I shot my wife. They figured I shot Kate. So then I said to them, get some glue and we'll put this toilet bowl back together again.
Because you'd be the plumber. You would know how.
No. I told the kids to get some glue and we'll put a toilet bowl back together again. And we did. Well, we didn't do such a good job because Martha Ray came in the following day and we left. And her act was going on, and obviously she used the thing. And it fell down and cut her up in various and sundry places. And she tried to sue me, but she couldn't find us because we were gone by then. We were on the road.
That would be an interesting case to hear in court.
She still talks about it to this day. She makes a big deal out of that. Very, very, very wonderful woman, by the way.
Yeah, she's a very funny woman.
Yeah.
I guess you didn't think that was very funny.
She's, for a star, she's real nice. Some stars aren't. Carol Lombard was one of the nicest stars with whom I didn't work, but, you know, the same studio. And Ann Sheridan was probably the most. She was the most. One day, Ann Sheridan had a dental appointment. And we decided that, well, she shouldn't keep the dental appointment, so they have ramps on the sets where they put these big lights and everything. So we drove her car up on a ramp, and then we took the thing away, the thing that leads up to the ramp, we took it away, or whatever you call it.
Game planks.
Yeah, we took that away, and when she came out, her car was sitting up 12 feet in the air with no way to get it off. That was a dirty trick. That's the only thing I did that I regretted.
You liked Bogart, too, didn't you?
Oh, Bogart was the best. He was a prince. Bogart was... some people didn't like Humphrey Bogart, just like some people don't like, Frank Sinatra. And we all have friends, we all have enemies, and I don't think there's anybody that has all friends. But Bogart was, oh boy, he was, I call him a prince. They called Barrymore Prince, somebody called him, in fact, they wrote a book about
him. Good Night, Sweet Prince. Yeah.
But Bogart was the nicest. He occasionally, you know, got in a little trouble with drinking, which everybody drinks does. But he was a very, very nice person.
Where do you keep your... I like your hat you're wearing today, but I was wishing you'd take your famous hat. I understand
he
it's done in bronze.
You know, it's funny about his hat. I walked into a bar around the corner. He wouldn't even serve me a drink. They looked at his Western hat, and they said, oh, he must be drunk wearing that hat. I imagine that's what... presuming that's what he thought, because he wouldn't serve me a drink.
So, is the famous one really done in bronze? The one you wore in all those pictures?
The original was in Adams. If you want to publicize really? Adams, it was mad. But the way I got it was rather odd. One day, I was wearing that little, it was a felt, little felt deal that I wore in Dead End with holes in it and everything like that.
I think they call them devil's caps.
Yeah.
Because I had one, sure.
All right, so one day.
Not as nice as yours,
I lost it. So I, the prop man had this beautiful Adams hat on, you know, the Adams hat. And I said, can I borrow that for a minute? I borrowed it for 30 years. He never got it back.
Well, it was most distinctive. You were called Spit originally. That was the character name, right?
It was the original.
Then what were you called in Bowery Boys? Was it the same?
Well, they changed the name several times. I can't quite remember some of them. The probably the most the one that people remember the most was Muggs McGinnis. But I had a name before that that I can't quite remember. Oh, Slip Mahoney.
Right,
Slip Mahoney.
Yeah.
That's the one I forgot. Slip Mahoney, Muggs McGinnis, and then Spid. And maybe in between there was a couple other names, but those were the most well-remembered by people that write me letters and things.
Do you ever think what you might be doing if you'd stayed with Uncle Rob and his plumbing shop?
Yes. I think I'd have done better, mainly because I would have married a nice Jewish girl, rich. Never met a poor Jew.
Oh, I'll introduce you to a few.
Every Jew I ever met.
There's a few around here.
No, I'm serious. I mean, it may not sound right, but my family is half Jewish and half Irish Catholic and half Russian Jew. And the Irish Catholics haven't got a nickel, but all the Russian Jews are doing real good. They own half of New York, I think.
Well, now you said in your book you're looking for a nice Catholic girl.
Yeah, well, that was satirical. That was with tongue in cheek, you know, just as a reversal of what I've done before. Actually, I may start going with boys. These girls are costing me a lot of money. $300,000 in 3 years is a lot of money. I'm beginning to study the situation. I may become a hermit.
Did you have a good time, though, making all those movies? 84 is what I counted, 84 feature films.
Roughly, but it's not a good time. It's very difficult work. You have to be in the studio 2 hours, roughly, before you work, and maybe an hour after you finish. So, in other words, you put in maybe a 12 or 14-hour day, and if you count your traveling time, you put in about a 16-hour day, and it's not easy. It's a little rough. And then they change the script on you sometimes. Of course, maybe I changed it more than they did, but you'll come in the morning, and you have all this these pages memorized, and suddenly somebody says, well, we can't do that, we changed it. And then when they start changing, I start changing, and it became quite a hassle. It's not easy work. It's not half as easy. It's not fun. It's a job.
Well, it beats the fooling with people's pipes, doesn't it?
Yes, it pays well. I got as much as $25,000 for a picture, which only took 8 days to shoot. Nevertheless, it sounds real fantastic, to $25,000 for 8 days. I'm not complaining, but about half of that went in taxes, and another portion went in fees, agent fees. Another portion went in just no operational expenses. I would say that when I made $25,000 a week, that I wound up with about $2,500. I'd say I wound up with about 10% of it.
Well, I would settle right now for $2,500 a week.
You know, yeah. Something right now I would too.
I have a guest next week who told me, when I told her you were coming in today, that she had a big crush on you. She said, you made a picture at MGM about the same time she was there, making an Our Gang comedy. Her name is Darla Hood. Remember Darla Hood?
She heard me.
Well, she lives in Englewood Cliff, New Jersey.
Really?
And she's going to be here next week.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you had one star with a crush on
you. How old is she? About my age, would you say?
I haven't seen her yet. I don't think so. She has a boy
a
about 6 or 7. I would think she's a little bit younger, yeah.
I remember, she was a doll. She really was a doll. I remember her. There's two girls I remember, Darla Hood and
Marsha May Jones.
The singer from MGM.
Diana Durbin?
No.
Judy Garland?
Judy Garland.
Yeah. Well, who could forget her?
She started out in a real beautiful. Well, in fact, I still think she can sing. She got in. Well, anyway, I like her. There were very few people that I worked with whom I worked, I should say, that I did not like. Just very few. Most of them, they may not get along with the general public, but they have a caste system.
Among actors, I think that's true, sure. In the business, I think they're
close. And particularly when they work in the same studio, they have a caste system. I mean, the stars don't go with the extras. But the extras go with the extras, and they have a caste system, and the stars go with the stars. You work at MGM, and you work with, say, Spencer Tracy. Unfortunately, I guess he's...
He died.
Died. Habit, some people. Some people have a habit of dying. But Spencer Tracy, and he would go with four or five, actors or actresses in the same studio, but he would not go with actors or actresses from a different studio. He wouldn't go with anybody from the 20th Century Fox, for instance. They got a real caste system. Guys from MGM go with the guys from MGM and the girls from MGM. The guys and the girls from 20th Century Fox go with the guys and the girls from 20th Century Fox. It's a caste system.
Well, they had a nice selection at all those at all those lots. I want to thank you very much, Leo Gorcey, for coming in today all the way from Los Molinos, California, where you have that ranch. I'll mention your book again. It's published by Vantage Press, and it's called Leo B. Gorcey, an original Dead End Kid Presents, Dead End Yells, Wedding Bells, Cockle Shells, and Dizzy Spells. And I look forward to our dinner tomorrow night with Hans Hall.
Good, if I last that long.
And a drink with Gabe Dell.
This is an action town, and I may not be alive tomorrow night, but I'm going to try real hard.
Well, thanks again to Leo Gorcey, who, along with the other members of the original Dead End team, went on to be the East Side Kids and the Bowery Boys, were one of the first rebels against poverty, I guess you might say, in motion and on the stage.